great Hank Crawford on saxophone with Mr. Blues, the title track, I should say, from his 1967 album. And of course, it's one of my favorites. He is one of my favorites. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're picking up from where we left off yesterday. Many of you were still on the line, unable to get through. We were talking about many things, but principally, we talked about this case that has been transmuted into something that needs to be investigated. The case concerning Officer Daniel Pantaleo, the person who applied a chokehold to the neck of Eric Garner 5 years ago, killing him. And miraculously, 5 years later, the case comes to trial. One would think it is a criminal trial, but you'd be wrong if you think that. Somehow it has been transmuted into a procedural or administrative hearing. And the question is not about the circumstances in which Eric Garner lost his life at the hands of Pantaleo, as well as other fellow officers, but the appropriateness of the maneuver. And this is really galling, and it is, in my view, it should be investigated, because we don't know. This is a case involving the death of a citizen, and it was not an ordinary death. This was not, you know, he didn't die of old age or of prolonged disease. He died because a gang of police officers, and Pantaleo played a leading role in this whole thing, descended on Eric Garner, who was selling what they called loosies or loose cigarettes. And for that, he paid with his life. And now we have the insult that the case is not coming before a jury and the charge is not murder. What is happening is that the case is now being heard before not a real judge, as in a regular judge who sits in a regular court, but it's being heard by a police official. And they are discussing whether this maneuver that Pantaleo used was legal or not, or whether there was some other variation of it. But it is on the record that the police department itself had outlawed chokeholds. Chokeholds were outlawed a long time ago. So now the question is why? Why is this case not being heard in a court of law? Why is it now a matter of an administrative review? And what possible penalty would Pantaleo have if found guilty? By the way, there's no jury. So this case in no way resembles a case that comes up in regular court. So we were talking about that yesterday, and the general view was that this case needs to be investigated. All the while that people were waiting for this case to be adjudicated, Pantaleo continued to serve on the police force. He was not stripped of his rank. He doesn't have rank, actually. He's a regular police officer. What is striking about this regular police officer is that he was earning a salary of up to $120,000 a year. That is really interesting. I don't know any regular police officer, just regular police officer, who is earning $120,000 a year. So if you wish to catch up, if you had tried yesterday to get through and you couldn't because of heavy traffic, today's your day to do that, and we will also move on to other subjects. But I wanted to provide the opportunity for your comment on this particular case. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. And as we start out, I want to remind you, we're getting close to that date of Sunday, May the 26th. I'll be in Manhattan. I'll give a talk. In fact, I've been invited by the Global Affairs Committee of the Community Church, located at 40 East 35th Street between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue. I was there last year. It was an extraordinary event. And it was all about forming and seeing a community, seeing each other's faces, and having fellowship, if you will, to borrow a church phrase. But it was great to meet each other. And now I want to continue that process and to encourage people to begin to form community, you know, form community, because this allows us at any moment's notice to activate ourselves in support of or in opposition to something that affects the entire community. So we can do that. So I look forward to seeing you. It starts at 1 o'clock, the talk that is, but there's pre-registration at 12:30. There's no money is involved. You don't have to pay. There's no cost. There's no fee. It is just about getting an idea of who is part of this community, and we look forward to seeing you then. So make sure you invite a friend as well. We're looking forward to that. Clara from Philadelphia, you're on the air. Hello, Clara.
I have 2 points related to the issue you discussed yesterday. One is, I was listening and I was wondering, with all the maneuverings of the police department, I was wondering whether the family had engaged any kind of legal protection for themselves while all of this was going on. See, I haven't been following the case enough to know that.
The most recent development where the family is concerned is that the family arrived at a settlement with the police department, but it wasn't supposed to end there. There was still the matter of Pantaleo and the prosecution of Pantaleo, but this is what they decided they would do, the police department, which is to take the case out of a regular court of law and make it an administrative procedure.
Yeah. Well, that was my other point, that they arrived at a settlement. And once you do that, whether this is legally true or not, in the minds of many people, you've accepted the situation and you've given up probably some of your rights to pursue the issue further. I don't know that, but it seems that by accepting a settlement, it's as if you've reduced the liability in some way of the people you're about to take on. And I think one of the strategies that we need to develop and stick to is to never arrive at any settlement until everything has been adjudicated, because whether it ends the process or not, in the eyes of the many people in the public, it could seem like, okay, they've settled with the police. And it kind of undermines the efforts of the people who are fighting for the family.
Well, I see your point. However, there's another way to look at it, and that is you have an egregious death occurring here.
Yeah.
And under really horrible circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Many times the legal advisors to the families, anytime people are talking about settlements and the settlements are in the millions, many of the legal advisors would encourage the families to go towards settlement because the thinking is, well, it's something, and it's a lot more than you would get if this case went to trial. The other part of it is that many times these cases are being handled by sole practitioners. They have small offices, and these cases do run up a lot of bills that have to be paid for. And so whether subtle or just overt, the lawyers tend to persuade the families that, well, it's not a bad deal. Take the settlement, and we will still pursue the case. But if they agree to a settlement of this amount, let's take it. This way, the lawyer gets paid, and many small lawyers, when I say small offices, many lawyers don't have the wherewithal to sustain continuing expenses and, you know, without getting paid. So it's a very tough choice many lawyers make to stick with a case for, you know, a long time without being paid. And here we come into the matter of how communities have to respond or should respond.
Yeah.
You know, the families, I mean, in the immediate aftermath, there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of agitation and all of that. It is not to be mistaken for help.
Right.
People would come out and they would attend protests, marches, and so forth. But after that, the family still is left alone. They still have expenses, and they're still suffering the loss of a loved one, but there is no financial support, and they're left alone to kind of fend for themselves. So it's a very complicated thing, and we have to be mindful that this is what happens to many families. They suffer in silence because they're in a tough position. They don't want to do certain things for fear that the community might misread it as, you know, well, we're after the money. But in the meantime, they have to deal with the practical issues of life. And the community just isn't there on a consistent basis to help them.
Yes, I understand that. While you're talking, I'm listening, and I'm thinking that possibly as a community, not in the process of the crisis, during the crisis, but maybe now, start thinking about how to get that money. I'm thinking about, okay, I understand that they need interim money. We could think of it as interim, and that could be in the signing. This is an interim. We need this money now to move on, and then the bulk of the money could be used to hire a real attorney, like the one Maddox, and then take on the system. I mean, to be able to, as a community, sue the system. They're responsible for this policeman's behavior. I don't mean let him off the hook, which is happening anyway, but that system is acting now in a criminal way. If some of that money could be reserved for that, the big fight, it might, I don't know, it's just an idea. Okay, you need money to get through the crisis, but you had money to get through all of your other crises. The bulk of that money could be used in service of the community.
I mean, all these ideas are excellent ideas. The thing is, people tend not to be involved in that aspect of it. They tend to not want to be involved.
You know,
and yet it's so urgently needed.
Yeah, it seems to me, fortunately, at this point, I've never been in that situation, but I think if I were in that situation, I'd be so angry, I would not be able to stop. You see, that's the thing. You take the money, you know that's not the end. It's just, I'm just putting this out here. I know that this is not practical for people who are in the situation, but I'm just thinking the fight is so important, the fight.
Yes.
And that money could be used, you know, because they are still not, what do they call it, at peace with the money,
No, and then there was another death. The daughter died.
Yes.
Subsequent to Eric. So the family has sustained a lot of hurt. The question is, what role is the community playing in this matter? Not just in coming to the aid of the family, but in addressing how a community deals with this systemic problem. That is
important. This might be a good time to start to develop a strategy for the future, because this is a chronic problem. People are being shot.
Yes, some time ago I had raised the idea of establishing community emergency funds. That would be, you know, administered by a local church or some other entity, community institution, so that when things happen, there are available funds to begin the process of responding. But it went nowhere. You know, for example, in a situation where somebody's murdered by a police officer, all kinds of things immediately must be done, and they all cost money. Now, they want lawyers to come in, and, well, who's going to pay for the hotel? Who's going to pay for their meals? You know, that these are very practical questions. And I long ago suggested we should establish community emergency funds that are kept at a local black bank and that are, you know, constantly fed with ongoing fundraising so that there are funds available to respond to emergencies and other crises, but it just didn't go anywhere. Thank you for getting us started today, Clara. Thanks for your call. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Nutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope is well. I just wanted to, you know, I'm always reminded that Malcolm said justice before compensation. So Malcolm is not saying that compensation is not warranted, but what he is saying is focus. If justice really is your goal, then you get that first, no matter how long it takes, and afterwards you then fight for compensation, which is what the family of Yanko Rosenbaum in the Crown Heights situation did. But I wanted to share something about Pantaleo. In 2014, before he killed Eric Garner, Pantaleo was making $99,915. And after the incident, he was placed on desk duty. So a year later, he earned over $100,000. To be specific, he earned $105,061, $17,109 that was overtime, $11,600 and change was other earnings. Then a year later, still on desk duty, in 2016, he earned almost $120,000, almost $20,000 over his base pay in 2014 while still on desk duty. So when we're talking about establishing a fund that families can access when unfortunately they are killed, a loved one is killed at the hands of police, I am concerned about who would administer such a fund, because all of these families automatically gravitate to the usual suspects who are called upon to respond to these kinds of police shootings. And their strategy has always been compensation, not justice. So while I agree with your suggestion that such funds should be in place so that people don't have to feel pressured or under the gun to accept money and forego justice, because now, you know, you look at the family and they're asking for justice. Well, they got their justice. They got their money. Except that they're now beginning to understand that that really was not justice. So my concern is, who would administer such a fund? Because I can see those usual suspects, those ambulance chasers saying, oh, okay, we'll establish the fund and we'll administer it. Just like they're co-opting the whole reparations discussion.
Well, I agree with you. I don't have any disagreement with what you're saying, but we still have to appreciate just the logistics, because I've covered so many cases that present exactly the same problem and dilemma. A major catastrophe occurs in the life of a family due to the death of one of its members. Okay. Immediately, you have expenses. And these expenses are not just about arranging funerals and so forth. The expenses are in the course of a fight. You're anticipating a fight. So you have expenses immediately that go toward, say, gathering evidence on your own, interviewing witnesses. You have to do the same kind of police work that the police work that the police are doing. You have to have these things because they help so much, but they have to be paid for. People are not going to work at this for free. Some people might, but we have to consider, when you call a lawyer in, many of these lawyers can't afford to just shut down their office and pay attention to one case. Somehow, I mean, like I said, we call Sharpton. Let's say the situation in Ferguson blows up with the shooting death of Michael. So what do you do? You can't stop it because it has already begun. The wheel has already begun to turn. And it's in the very beginning that certain things must be done. When the police see that these things are not being done, you know, they read the situation. They read the situation as the community is wide open. You could do anything and get away with it. But if there's an indication that small things, but significant things, people are gathering evidence, people are interviewing witnesses, people are filing reports, people are filing requests for reports, all these things cost money. All these things cost money. And it becomes burdensome for the family already under stress to finance all these things that later will come into play if and when there is a trial. And even if they're willing to settle, it still enhances the argument and their position in negotiation. So we have to consider these kinds of events that we have seen over and over and over again. You know, people, it's good enough for people to say, well, call Sharpton. Okay, so you call Al Sharpton and he goes to Ferguson. Well, he has to sleep somewhere. He has to have breakfast. These things are not considered. He's got to find a way to get from one place to the other, which means he'll need a driver or he'll need some kind of way to get around, to talk with other ministers and call meetings, and where would that be held? The logistics are enormous. So very often the people who come in to help are themselves responsible for financing the help that they give. And it's a major consideration. I've seen it happen many, many times.
I agree. I don't disagree with anything you said. My only concern is that such a fund is going to be prime pickings for unscrupulous people.
Oh, yes.
That's
absolutely.
All I'm...
Absolutely. You're going to have a lot of sharks swimming in the waters. But it's something still to be considered, because every little bit helps when you have really serious circumstances to deal with, and everything costs money. Everything costs money. To print a flyer costs money. So we have to consider these things and work toward putting some kind of a system together. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it should exist.
Yes,
it should not be the case that lawyers are working sacrificially when sometimes it could cost them their practice, their whole legal practice, to just deal with one case and no money coming in. So we have to be mindful of these things. Thanks for calling. Mitch from New York, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Mitch.
There was a court hearing for Eric Garner.
Hold a second. You have something on. There's something in the background.
There was a grand jury hearing for Eric Garner. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Yeah, there was a grand jury hearing for Eric Garner. It was on Staten Island. And, of course, out on Staten Island, you have an all-pro police families living out there. So the grand jury came back with no bill, so he wasn't charged. And, I was saying that from the beginning, the trial should have been moved to a different area, a different district. Because, like I said, out in Staten Island, all you have is police officers and fire people. And, of course, they're not going to find him guilty of anything. And you had Eric Garner, and Eric Holder. He was the Attorney General for Barack Obama. And he came back with no bill. He didn't press any charges. And the lady that took over from him, she kept stating that there has to be some, we got to make sure all of our ducks are in order. I can't press any charges until everything is in order. She didn't bother about pressing any charges for him. So, the system works against us in so many ways. Even the only person that went to jail was the gentleman that filmed the whole thing on his camera. Well,
that's
he went to jail, and he was complaining that the police was following him and standing out in front of his house and parked out in front of his house for a long time. So eventually they charged him with something. He went to jail, and then you had an Al Sharpton, he got involved in it. And as soon as the money came down, he disappeared. Plus, he let this guy that filmed this thing go to jail. He could have got a better lawyer than a public defender to defend this young man. But he didn't, and the guy went to jail. So So, you know, it's, I'm just hoping that, you know, of course, he's going to lose his job, hopefully, you know, but if the federal government is going to step in...
Well, I doubt he'll lose his job. There's no certainty about that, because the issue now is a kind of contest as to what exactly was the method that Pantaleo used to restrain Eric Garner that resulted in his death. Was it a chokehold? Was it some kind of maneuver? They're calling it all kinds of things, but a chokehold. Because chokeholds were specifically outlawed by the department many years ago.
Well, it was a medical examiner. He testified today, and he said his death was caused by compression of the throat, which is suffocation, and not a seizure. And another doctor testified today, and he said the same thing. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, but they're arguing about what could have been the cause of death. But when you look at the film, there's no question as to what Pantaleo did. That was a classic chokehold.
Yes,
and despite the fact that Eric Garner kept repeating, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe," he continued to apply the chokehold.
Well,
and the first medical examiner ruled the death a homicide.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, so it's not a situation where people don't have an idea about what happened. The question is how the system is bending backwards to give as much elastic to Pantaleo as possible.
Yeah. Well, the governor could have stepped in. The governor could
the
have stepped in.
The mayor could have stepped in.
Yeah. Well, the mayor or the governor could have stepped in and ordered a special prosecutor to come in, and they could have prosecuted it that way, but it didn't happen. You know, it didn't happen. I mean, when Rodney King got into out in L.A. when he was accosted by the police officers, it was a, you know, there was a grand jury with him, and they came back with an old bill. But Bush one came in, and he put a grand jury in there for federal charges, and the police officers were convicted. But it didn't happen here. After they had the grand jury here, everything went dead. Al Sharpton, everything went dead. They just went for the payout, and, you know, just went downhill from there. I mean, it's a shame. It's a shame, but it doesn't look like anything real is going to happen here. Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you for contributing. Thanks, Mitch. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, this is such an important discussion, and greetings to all the beloveds. I made up a new word. First of all, Mitch made, the previous caller made such excellent points. One of the things, too, that we need to look at is that Pantaleo had a certain history that was ignored. He was the one that was stripping down and strip searching black men in the middle of was it Broadway, or, you know, it was some big avenue in broad daylight. So right away, he should have been brought into the office and fired. The Daily News from yesterday had a full-page piece called Garner Stunner, talking about his attorney. His attorney claimed that when, first of all, there's another aspect of this story, because when BAI had more call-in programs, a sister called in who knew Eric's father. And there's a whole different story. The footage doesn't show him selling any cigarettes at that point. His spot was at the ferry, and he had just broken up a fight. So the sister called in and explained that Eric, per the father, had actually made a formal complaint with the police. I don't know all the details, but we need to bring them down. And basically, the police were not only accosted him and arresting him for selling cigarettes, but they were taking his money. So Eric went in and tried to play. You know, we talk about he was selling loose cigarettes. First of all, Erica, before she died, they didn't even get his property. And part of the reason was his property, if they had returned, it wouldn't have showed that there was any basis for his being encountered in any way. Now, in terms of solutions, first of all, Mitch made some excellent points around this. There's no system in place. If the guy, Barrera, pre-Barrera, could do a book doing justice and he issued a press release instead of a prosecution on Romali Graham, you know, just breaking into the house and shooting him for no reason. In fact, in your house, you're even entitled to have a gun, but that wasn't the issue. The other piece is that as long, and this probably needs to be done from a federal level, because as long as you have what they call unions, it has nothing to do with being a union. They're actually allowed to put in place an equivalent to, and this guy, Pat Lynch, is just a textbook example. They have the authority to setting up these fraternity organizations that they call unions to actually be the support team for, you know, the people that were organizing the picnics and the lynchings. It's an equivalent to it. So until they, probably at the federal level, you know, bring all that down, you know, where they're defending the most outrageous situations with people. And people who brought up other cases, we have to look at it as a pattern. The Somali gentleman who thought he could act the same way as white police officers is doing some long time. The guy in Chicago that was convicted, he's only doing 6 years for, you know, Laquan was yards away, you know, walking away, and he shot him 16 times. So we have a system that, and maybe Donald Trump and his white supremacy will bring us to the point that we can actually start from square one and just do a whole redo of what this whole system, including the prison system, is.
Well, you know, I tend to think that the action should be local. We believe, and I think falsely, that the federal government automatically should be the ultimate authority in something. Really, no. This is a clarion call for local action. Why? Because people pay taxes to fund the police department and to pay the salaries of police officers. The city council can and must intervene. They can fire the police commissioner. They could even fire the mayor. But we just don't insist on it. The city council controls the budget of all city agencies. Again, we just don't insist that they do their job. We don't intervene and compel the city council, which for the first time in a long, long time has a very good representation, at least in terms of racial representation, on the city council. But they're not compelled people never make them address these situations.
Well, Eutrice, I agree. It has to be done on all fronts. The issue there is, though, you have thousands of counties across the country, so if we could get some leadership. And these things are starting to be discussed. I want to bring up a couple things on the trial yesterday. The attorney for Pantaleo actually used Eric saying, please, enough already, essentially, as his resisting arrest with nobody dealing with the fact that why were you bothering the brother and particularly looking to arrest him, you know. The second thing they brought up is that, which is the most outrageous thing, but that Pantaleo had actually saved the life of himself and Garner. So I'm just going to read this little piece here. It says, Alan... Also, London, the attorney for Pantaleo, said Garner's takedown, meaning bringing him to the ground with the chokehold, prevented him from crashing through a store window. Quote, he saved both his life and Mr. Garner's life by taking him to the ground, London, end quote, London declared. So they can spin it in the most outrageous, dog poo in your face way that somehow he saved Pantaleo's and Garner's life by not. I mean, so it gets beyond the beyond. As long as we reward people for the most murderous behavior, such as when, you know, there's an incident, they get a vacation. They get administrative leave with pay for a couple weeks or whatever the case is. So as long as there's reward attached to these behaviors, people, at least unconsciously, you know, are going to continue to do them.
Well, there is also the matter that you had more than Daniel Pantaleo in that pack that attacked Eric Garner. What happened to them?
And Eutrice, in the footage, which I saw recently, one of the police officers, heavy guy, of course, was holding him down from the back. Like he saw the killing of Eric Garner by Pantaleo because the medical examiner said compression of the neck, the chest, and he actually pushed Pantaleo off him, you know, where he actually saw. And all of those officers that participated, including the sergeant, a black woman sergeant, she didn't have the whatever to take on what was happening, but she was the supervisor. The mother wants her. She hasn't had any consequences to her behavior and her inability to do her job. There were several officers involved. They all participated. The medical people, the footage of they're just being stunned at the scene and not opening up his pathways and getting him in a position where he could. It's just so many aspects of the case. It's just something out of a dystopia fiction novel.
Well, we have to start tackling dystopias because people have been getting away literally with murder.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a major issue for us, as you know, for a long, long time in our communities. And we've got to get the message out that, you know, we take this seriously and we're coming after you and we are going to put you away. When you do this kind of harm to any member of our community, we should stand up. Thanks for calling in today. Sorry, finish your thought. Okay, we're gone. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Okay. Hi, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Okay, Ali. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. What I'm going to say, I know, is going to get a lot of people upset because I'm just listening to everyone talking about and giving ideas and giving statistics and repeating all already what we know, how he killed him. But I'm wondering how many of those people that they called your station and they call other stations have gone out there and do the work. The reason that I'm saying that is because when he got killed, 6 months later, our group, which kept doing something every month, okay? Every month we were out there. At the 6 month anniversary, you know how many people were in front of that store? 6 people, including myself. So when you talk about local action, and yesterday, that was the reason that I called today, is about where are the people? And I wanted to know, where are the people? Let me just tell you something else. We went to Patch Lynch's office, which is down in Bowling Green, and the first rally.
Pat Lynch is with the union. He's a the president of the union. Yes.
Yes. There were about 12 people there. But let me tell you, the second time that we called to go to his office, there were 3 people, and that was including myself. We couldn't even hold a rally. So all these people that they have all these ideas and all these people that they come with a statistics, it makes me, and they repeat the things that we already know. You know, sometimes I don't listen to your show because I just get very upset, especially on Friday. Because I just hear the people just repeating. The year later, when we went back a year in a night to go through the street of Staten Island, you know who were there? The lady who had that baby with him, which the little girl is about 3 or 4 years old now. I forgot the exact she's around 5 because I saw her about 2 months ago. And that lady and a group of people in Staten Island that they have an organization called Against Racism or something. A few of them. Where were the people? Hardly anyone after a year. But let me just tell you something else about Ramsey. All these people that called your show and all this show, and they're always talking about that he's in jail. Have they ever heard what's happened to Ramsey? What is happening at this moment? Ramsey didn't even want to come to New York because he's afraid that they're going to kill him. And Ramsey needs
Ramsey
money.
Ramsey is a young man who took the videotape.
Order. I'm getting an update because people, they always go, oh, the guy who took the film, he's in jail. Yeah, but you don't get the information. The next, what is happening to him? You know who is supporting Ramsey? One African-American and about a group of white people. And the reason that I know this is because they had a meeting and I went because I know the African-American woman who support, and she sends me picture. Every time that they go, the first time that they went not too long ago, I couldn't go because they have to stay over. It's about 6.5 hours from New York City. So they have to sleep over and then come back the next day. Ramsey needs money. Every time that I hear somebody talking about Ramsey, the guy who took the video, and now he's in jail, but you don't do anything. You just call these radio stations just to repeat yourself. It's about time that people do things, real action. I'm so upset every time that this is being talked about. You know, that's a mockery, that disciplinary hearing. White people need to know about that hearing. People need to know about what's happening to Ramsey at this time, at this moment. Then young men think they're going to kill him in jail. I don't know if I'm going to go to that Sunday that you're going to be at the 35th Street, which I went the first time that you were there. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to make it. But if I go there, I'm going to have a page where people could give at least $5 or $10 to Ramsey because he doesn't want to eat the food in the jail. So, I'm sorry. I'm too upset about this.
No, don't be sorry. You are making very legitimate points, and we need to hear it. And we need to hear it for someone like you, because you're not just talking off the top of your head. You've been literally on the front line. And this is, as you know, I talk about these things too. This is the work that we have to do as a community if we recognize community, but we don't. We don't generally, it is left usually to one person or to two or three people who place themselves on the line representing hundreds of thousands of others. That's not fair. That is not the concept of political activism. And you're absolutely right. There is nothing wrong that you have said. Everything you have said is on the money.
Everything. And the last thing that I have to say, that 6-month anniversary, let me tell you, the post, I'm not on the, I wasn't in the print, but if you go inside the internet and you Google after the 6 months, they said, cap hater. That's why they, one woman was a teacher in Staten Island and she never came back to, because she was too afraid. She was on the print. She was print out in the front page, cops hater, when we came back from because this journal, the so-called journalist from the Post. And what did we do? Now people are going to the Post because they wanted to say that they're racist. We already had done that. How many people were there? Not too many. When they Post printed out that we were cops hater.
I understand.
No. I'm very upset.
I know, but don't be upset. You need your level head, and we need you to keep your level head, so don't be upset. But be purposeful, not upset. But I understand very much how you feel. Well,
thank
that brings
you.
Us to the end of our program today. And I'm so happy that we carved out some extra space to talk about this that we couldn't get yesterday. So we afforded people the opportunity to be heard today. So I'm glad about that. We'll see each other tomorrow. And I thank you so much for listening and contributing today. Bye-bye.